what's the big mystery?
Bill, I have seen one or two things in my life. Never anything like this.
You know there is no way on earth that you're going to leave here alive without taking me with you.
Suppose I said that all of that was fake.
It's only a dream.
Hope you're ready to have your mind blown, because we're about to blow it. If you've ever seen Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut film, then you know there is an enigmatic, secret-coded message within that movie, and I'm going to explain it to you. And this isn't going to be one episode. No, that's for the losers. You're here because you're an OG granola wokester and you want to go all the way down the rabbit hole. You want to cross that rainbow, see what's on the other side. I'm going to escort you. Put your little hand in mine. Let's do this. Because, now you know, and look, I wrote the book on the subject. I wrote Kubrick's Code. Right? Little did I know back in 2014 when I was writing that book, I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I decoded the messages in the film, and oh my God. So much more to the story. So that's what I'm going to give you. And we're going to dedicate like an entire month to this topic. So if you ever wanted to know what was going on with Eyes Wide Shut, we're going to look behind every corner, every nook and cranny. We will expose. I'm going to first go through the film. Step by step, I will walk you through the whole film. If you've never seen it, I will explain the whole thing, what happens, listen to some important dialogue in the film, and I'll walk you through some of the ideas I presented in Kubrick's Code, which is, of course, available on Amazon and Audible. Of course it is. The book's got some color images. You can buy a signed copy on the Gumroad from me. But we're going to go through the movie, and this is going to take a couple of shows, because I ain't messing around. I'm not half-stepping on these Eyes Wide Shut analysis this time. Nothing will escape this time. But yeah, the next, we're going to do a couple episodes going through the whole film. And that's, of course, going to be in the free feed, of course, for everybody. But then, only for the supporters, we're going to go deep behind the scenes. We're going to get into the book that this movie was based upon, because Kubrick was obsessed with the dream novella. And I'll explain all this on those shows. And I'm only going to put these on the supporter feeds. I'm going to go, I read the whole book for you. The dream novella book that this movie was based on, that Kubrick was obsessed with since the 60s. He wanted to make a movie about this book. And it was his last film before he mysteriously passed away. Well, I don't know. Is it a mystery? I don't know. But anyway, that'll be only on my supporter feeds. And then, if you want to get even crazier, I went through a second book. There was a book written about the making of Eyes Wide Shut, and it goes through exhaustive detail. That's going to be another couple shows. So, I mean, we're talking like, this might be like six shows. So get ready for that. Grab your little popcorn. Grab your little coffee. Because we're about to get real jiggy with it. But the deep behind the scenes cuts of Dream Novella and the making of the Eyes Wide Shut books, I'm only going to give those to the supporters, the OGs. That, of course, you deserve to be on that list if you're not already. You know the links are in the show notes. Pick your flavor. You could do the IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section. You could do the Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. You could also do Rockfin.com/creator/Isaac. It just depends on what you're looking for, my friend. But I'm going to put the same episodes on all three. And it's gonna be monumental. It's gonna be epic. And we're gonna go deeper than anything else you've ever read or seen when it comes to Eyes Wide Shut. Your eyes will be so wide open it'll hurt. We're gonna pry your eyeballs wide open. And in fact, you know, we just wrapped up a book club that went several months on Patreon for The Dark Path. We did a book club. And now we're going back to making bonus episodes every month for everybody on the supporter feeds. And we're going to hit this Eyes Wide Shut hard. Hard in the paint. Harder than anyone's ever gone. So without further ado, let's get into part one, where I'm going to walk you through the film. And it's going to be full of plot spoilers and full of greatness. So as always, is the film worth it? You're going to get a hot take first and foremost. Of course it's worth it. Come on, it's a Stanley Kubrick movie. Of course. But, caveat, it's over 2.5 hours, which, you know, violates my main rule of movies. But hey, you know what? Kubrick's the only guy that can pull this off. Kubrick and Christopher Nolan. And Aronofsky. I feel like those three directors can pull it off. A testament to the talent there, right? And who's in it? Come on. Do we have to ask? The second greatest actor of all time is the protagonist of this movie. Don't make me say his name. You know who it is. What can I even say? This is a man who's given you everything. And people just dog on the poor man. He's 5'7". That's almost average height. Come on. Just because he's a member of the Church of Scientology, that doesn't make him bad. There's lots of weirdos into weird belief systems and religions. We're friends with all of them. Your own friends are weirdos with religious weird ideas. And that's fine. What, you got the Dakota ring? You know what reality is? Now, that being said, I think the Scientology stuff's wacky. But you know what? And it's going to come up in this movie. Kubrick was laying it all out for you. So yeah, of course, the second greatest actor of all time is the lead role in this movie. And then, of course, his consort, Nicole Kidman. And she, oh boy. Boy, does she have a curious background too, my friends. I don't know if you remember, back in the golden age of blogging on IlluminatiWatcher.com, I had an article about how her father had these connections to alleged ritual satanic abuse of the kids. This is long before the pizza stuff. Long before the pizza stuff. The tale goes something like this. Goes a little something like this. Hit it. The tale goes something like this. A person named Fiona Barnett filed a complaint against Anthony Kidman. That's Nicole Kidman's father, who is a psychologist. And he was allegedly, big allegedly, all caps, a member of this child abuse satanic ring in Sydney, Australia, called the Ninth Circle. Now, I got this sources back in 2014. Long before Pizzagate was a glimmer in QAnon's rotten little eyeball. We were talking about this stuff. So in some ways, I fueled this movement that I played a part in fueling this movement that I disagree with. You know, hey, we all fall short of the glory of God sometimes. But you know what? And that's what sucks is, like, a lot of this stuff, a lot of these claims, like, I see what these people are seeing. So, like, in some ways in the Venn diagram, I cross over with some of these people that I'm very critical of. But we're not here to talk about that. Let's talk about Anthony Kidman. He's supposedly a member of this Ninth Circle. And what did this Ninth Circle do? Well, they did all the things. Satanic ritual sacrifice and child abuse and human trafficking and Nazi mind control. And you know, Kubrick was always into this Nazi stuff. Always. And he died. Right? He died before the accusation was thoroughly investigated, further fueling the conspiracy theory. And back in 2014, when I wrote about this, I linked to Neon Nettle, which is allegedly one of these fake news websites. you know, that's the caveat for what it's worth. This is, and the link I provided is now, in fact, dead, but luckily I copied and pasted the text from that link, and I will read it for you right now. It's kind of long. She recalled in her horrifying testimony in the late afternoon of October 28th, 1975. I was taken to my sixth birthday party in the Kiama rainforest. The cordial was spiked with drugs. I fell asleep. When I woke, it was dark, and I was lying naked face up, spread eagle on a picnic table with my hands and legs tied. Perpetrators took turns sneaking up on me. They had carried rifles and had a pack of starving Doberman dogs. I was told a group of naked children huddled nearby were my responsibility. I was to run and hide them. Every child I failed to hide would be killed and fed to the dogs. They painted something on my back and chest and then released us. The hunting party reached us. Shots were fired and children began dropping all around me. You remember, hold on, side note. What was that film analysis I did? I think it was called The Hunt. Wasn't that what this was? Remember that? The hunting party, they were hunting humans? Anyway, back to the story. With all hope lost of my saving the other children, I took off and ran for my life. Then the article continues. It says, Barnett names Dr. Kidman as the main perpetrator, also trying to stop her from spreading out in her sickening experiences at the hands of the Child Abuse Network, and that news of his death has certainly affected her. She detailed that she believes he may have been sacrificed by his masters, revealing in a Before It's News report. Before It's News is another one of these alleged fake news websites, okay? Caveat. Quote, the main perpetrator of my child abuse, Anthony Kidman, is dead after I filed complaints accusing him of rape, torture, and murder of children in an exclusive Sydney pedo ring. Quote, he subjected me to horrific sexual and physical assault, but there are even worse and more serious crimes against children that I've witnessed Kidman commit as a member of the elite Sydney pedo ring. Kidman was responsible for ensuring that I never disclosed pedo activities that I was witnessed as a child, and he failed. As a victim of mind control, I feel he's been sacrificed for failing to adequately program me. Now, what's curious about all of that is that Nicole Kidman also played a role in a film called Stepford Wives. Remember that? About MKUltra programmed women. And on the cover, on the one sheet poster, she's given the vow of silence. And the story of the Stepford Wives was written by the same guy who wrote Rosemary's Baby, about the establishment doing satanic rituals in secret. Also, Nicole Kidman in real life, she's terrified of butterflies. The MK Ultra butterflies scare her. So yeah, interesting choices for the actors that old Kubrick chose. And I want you to keep this in the back of your mind, because later on in the analysis, I believe it's on the second part, we will talk about MK Ultra and the symbolism of the rainbow. Because it all fits into this stuff. Like Fritz Springmeier told you in his book about how to program a blah, 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 Illuminati mind control slave. And he talks about the rainbow and the programming. Isn't that something? And isn't it something that that book was released right before Kubrick started filming Eyes Wide Shut in 1996? A coincidence? That he chose Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. And there's going to be lots of strange connections. You got to hang into this analysis till the end of Tom Cruise with the Church of Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and the sex magic and the Aleister Crowley. It's all connected, I tell you, my friend. And then another actor worth noting, Leon Vitali. This guy's been working with Kubrick for a long time. He's the personal assistant. He's an actor. He helped handle Eyes Wide Shut after Kubrick's death. Now, let's get into the movie. Are you ready? Starts out, Nicole Kidman, whose character is Alice Harford, and she's married to Tom Cruise's character, Bill Harford, Dr. Bill Harford, excuse me. Okay. Starts out in their beautiful Manhattan penthouse, I don't know, whatever, apartment, house, whatever they call that. And she's dropping the, Alice is dropping the black dress. So right off the bat, first scene, it's about female sexuality. You're looking at Nicole Kidman's butt cheeks in the first 2 seconds. It's about female sexuality. But wait, there's more. Because as I talked about in Kubrick's Code, you'll notice she's between two pillars. Now, the two pillars represent Boaz and Joaquin in Freemasonry. This is the entrance to Solomon's Temple, the entrance to the mystical place, the entrance to the other side of the rainbow. And you must reconcile the opposites of Boaz and Joaquin, the female sexuality and the male sexuality. This is a recurring theme in the movie. And Alice, she is our Scarlet Woman. She plays a role in the Triple Goddess. Different elements of the female progression. We'll cover that later. I'm just kind of planting seeds right now. But yeah, right off the bat, boom. Alice is dropping her black dress. Next thing we see, Bill, old Dr. Bill. He's looking for his wallet. And he asks his wife, he asks Alice, where's my wallet? Because she's the all-knowing. She knows where that wallet is. She knows the name of the babysitter. And Dr. Bill, he doesn't know none of this. He's just a goofball. And we see Dr. Bill coming out from the darkness between the two pillars on the other side of the room. And you got all these duality elements, right? She's in the lit up side of the room, in the bathroom, between the two pillars. He's in the dark side of the room between the two pillars. She's enlightened. He is not. And he comes out from the pillars in the darkness, duality elements off the charts in the first 10 seconds. And it sets up this whole argument that he's just like this aloof goofball dude. And he's confirming it. She's like, well, how do I look? And he doesn't even look at her. He's like, yeah, you look great, baby. You look great. And meanwhile, his dumbass is just, he's looking for his wallet. He doesn't know the babysitter's name. He's like, are you even in this family, bro? Then, you know, and you'll notice the apartment. It's very opulent. I mean, even for a doctor, you know, because she doesn't work anymore. She used to run an art curator or whatever. But she's not really working. She's just taking care of Helena, their daughter. But even for a doctor, a young doctor, his medical school's probably not even paid off yet. Quite the apartment. And this is another theme. You've got these levels of wealthiness. And the Dr. Bill Harford and the family, they're wealthy, but not as wealthy as the people we're going to meet in the movie. That's on some next level stuff. And that's what this movie's about. It's about juxtaposing wealth, super wealthy 1%ers against the wealthy, against the poor. Which we meet in the movie with people like Domino, the prostitute, or Nick Nightingale, the guy who's such a broke ass, he's got to travel away from his home just to play the piano at these clubs to make some money. But, you know, just another theme that you'll recognize. Now, another theme is Christmas. You see Christmas all over the place. And it only is referenced one time in the whole movie, but you see Christmas trees and decor everywhere. And Helena, the daughter, she's asking if she can go see Nutcracker, which confirms it's about Christmas. And besides the obvious, like, you know, these lit up Christmas trees everywhere and poinsettias and all this stuff. Now, Helena, the name for the daughter, is quite curious. That is the name of the goddess. Going back to the pagans, going to Helen of Troy in Greek mythology. She was the daughter of Zeus, the most beautiful woman in the world. She's also the Scarlet Woman. Now, if you look at Aleister Crowley's Gnostic Catholic Church, there was a prominent member named Helena Aperion. And she wrote the creed for the Gnostic Church in 1998. And she calls out the Earth Mother of Babylon as the womb for all of mankind. This is a Gnostic theme, and we will cover more into that later. I don't want to overwhelm you yet. But Babylon is described in the literature of the magical working order, the OTO, as the same as Sophia from Gnosticism. This is the wisdom. If you recall that Sophia, in the Gnostic history, she was paired up. She was the consort to Chaos. It was a male and female essence, the Seiges. And she sort of accidentally created our world. And this is where you get a lot of the ideas of the dual nature, because God, the real God, the invisible spirit God, had everything paired up in perfection, in male and female perfect Seiges. You've got the sun and the moon, you've got the sky and the earth, you've got the Shiva and the Shakti, you've got the lion and the serpent, which again is basically the sun and the wisdom. You've got Shamash and Ishtar, which plays a role in this film, right? A.K.A. the goat with the bobs, Baphomet. The whole film is about masculine versus feminine, about duality. It's the alchemical wedding, 2.5-hour alchemical wedding ritual that ends in full Kundalini explosion. Now, if you're lost, hang in there. I will explain all of this. I just don't want to spring it all on you at the end. So I'm trying to like sort of coax you in here. Now, Helena is also a curious name because you've got Helena Blavatsky, who started Theosophy. And Theosophy was something that L. Frank Baum was into. L. Frank Baum, of course, the guy who wrote Wizard of Oz, which again will come up later with the Rainbow Talk. Now, L. Frank Baum and the Wizard of Oz connects to Aleister Crowley because Oz is the name of one of his books, Book 77, called Liber Oz, O-Z equals 77. And in this book, Aleister Crowley said, "There is no God but man," which is what this is all about. Now, and of course, The Wizard of Oz alleged to be an MKUltra programming film. Some people even claim that Judy Garland herself was MKUltra programmed. So Bill and Alice, Bill finds his wallet because Alice knows where it's at. They get out the house. They go to a guy named Ziegler's party. Now, Ziegler is the guy played by Sidney Pollack. And it was originally supposed to be Harvey Keitel, but Harvey Keitel. I'm a big fan of Taxi Driver. I shouldn't get his name wrong, but he dipped out. He was doing it for a while, and he was like, "You know what? I've had enough. Kubrick takes too damn long. I got things to do." So Harvey Keitel rolled out. Sidney Pollack was put in there as Ziegler, and of course Ziegler, he represents the Illuminati here, the secret society. The one percenters. The wealthy that are on a level much higher than Dr. Bill Harford. And when Bill and Alice get to Ziegler's party at Ziegler's place, you see the duality represented on the floor with a black and white checkered floor. Of course, you know where we're going with that. That's the Moses pavement, the mosaic pavement of the Freemason temples. Because again, they buy into the same ideas. And Ziegler, of course, is a German surname that means brick maker. The Freemasons are the brick makers. Is it a coincidence? I think not. And when you're in the house, you'll see there are also these eight-pointed stars throughout the whole house. This is the Star of Ishtar. And recall previously we talked about the dualities of Shamash and Ishtar, which goes back to the idea of the Seiges, the pairs of the male and female, perfected pairs of the Gnostic god. And you'll see the eight-pointed stars throughout the whole house. And I put all the images in my book, Kubrick's Code, which, by the way, if you sign up for IlluminatiWatcher.com's VIP section or patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, you will see those in the book that you get for free when you sign up for one of those two systems. In fact, if you're on Rockfin, I even do you one better. Rockfin has the like 2 or 3 hour video, 2.5 hour video I made for Kubrick's Code. It's the film companion with the clips. That's on my Rockfin because it's been banned everywhere. I've been banned off of YouTube and then Vimeo, and there it is. It's on Rockfin. So Anyway, they're at the house. They're at Ziegler's house, and they split up. Bill goes to say hi to an old buddy named Nick Nightingale. He's playing the piano. Alice, she heads to the bathroom. And when she heads to the bathroom, you'll notice this shapeshifter inconsistency, which, again, you got to see the images or the film clip. You'll see that there's a man and a woman walking, and the woman completely shifts into someone else. But the man stays the same. It's very strange. And it's unlike Kubrick. I mean, the guy was obsessive. This is like, I believe Eyes Wide Shut was like the longest filming ever. I mean, the guy was a perfectionist, right? It was the longest produced film in history. And somehow we've got this shapeshifter that makes their way in there. Which you could argue the shapeshifter stuff fits into the idea of the archons that are the shapeshifters that in the Gnostic version of history created our world. I mean, that might be a stretch. Or maybe Kubrick just screwed up. I mean, it's not impossible to have an inconsistency in the film. I'm not trying to claim that, but I find it very curious. Now, Bill's off doing his thing. Alice, she goes to the bathroom. I think she takes a dump. I'm not sure. And she's... Sorry, I'm trying to make it light. I'm over here talking about CGs and Gnostic demiurge. You're probably losing half of you. I'll bring you back with Nicole Kidman taking a dump. So she gets done. And she's drinking alone. And here comes Sandor Savast. He's this old dude, again, one of these one percenters. And he grabs her drink. And he chugs it in front of her face. Bold move, my friend. Bold move. Sandor, he's spitting game. He's like, hey, have you ever read Ovid's The Art of Love? And that book, curiously enough, is a Roman book about how to pick up women and telling women how to keep their man. So he's, you know, I guess showing his prowess of some sort. And I did a little research on Ovid, this Roman author. And he's known for a book called Metamorphoses, which is like the history of the world written over 15 books. My God. Put the pen down, Ovid. But then there's this Art of Love, and these are three books. Book one teaches men how to find women. Book two tells men how to keep the women. Book three tells the women how to keep the man. Now, according to Wikipedia, book one talks about redefining marriage from the possessive nature to more of a mutually satisfactory relationship. Sounds good to me. There's something about a traditional marriage that needs worked on a little bit. I've read Esther Perel's book. Oh dear, what's it called? Do I need to look it up? Esther Perel. She wrote a book, and it was an interesting book, and it was talking about the trappings of the modern day marriage and sort of denying the true nature of mankind. And women, for that matter. It's called Mating in Captivity. Jeez, how long did that take me to stall to find it? And it's a very interesting idea. I mean, I don't disagree with what she's saying. You know, she suggests that women have more of a desire for sexual fulfillment than our culture wants to believe, than our religions want to believe. Anyway, and that's a side tangent. Maybe I'll save that for me and Mrs. Weishaupt's show, Breaking Social Norms, now available as a free feed on all the places you find your podcast. We did a whole show on Crowley, by the way. I don't know if you heard that. It's a good one. Anyhow, but yeah, that's what book one is. But now if you go to Vigilant Citizen, who did an analysis of Eyes Wide Shut, VC says that these are a series of Roman books on how to cheat on your partner. And that the first book had an invocation to Venus, the planet associated with lust. Now, I combed through the book. I found it online. Yeah, it's kind of hard to read. It's got this flowery, you know, I mean, this was written in like the first century. So it's very hard to read. And I'm certainly no expert on the writings. But I didn't see any invocations per se. Just several mentions of Venus and Mars and all these mythological figures of Rome. I also didn't see anything about cheating. And, you know, I don't know if you read Vigilant Citizen ever, but VC's quite the pearl clutcher. I'm thinking the sex talk made him or her uncomfortable. So, I don't know. Here's what I did read. I got beef with Vigilant Citizen. I don't remember what it was, but back in the golden age of blogging, they took something from me. And I put a comment on the website, and they deleted the comment. And I was like, oh, you rotten bastard. And don't think I forgot Vigilant Citizen. VCs, I don't think they've ever done like a podcast or anything. It's always been this sort of like secretive character. Anyhow, I'm not here to talk bad. I'll save that for truth or drama. No, but let's see. All right, here's what I did find in the book, in book one. Just to counter with proof, because Vigilant Citizen doesn't offer any proof. They just say, oh, it's a book about cheating. These rotten sexual deviants, you know. Well, I would argue it says the opposite, dummy. It says this, quote, and I'm just kidding, Vigilant Citizen does some great research, so take it easy. Quote, the bird does not instruct the fowler in which direction he may be taken. The hind does not teach the hostile hounds how to run. Still, let interest see to itself. My precepts with fidelity will I give. See how, can you imagine reading that whole book? Now but they're saying that I will give fidelity. Quite the opposite of a book about how to cheat. Then here's another one. Quote, even my real amours I confess, but with reserve, and my secret intrigues are concealed with sure fidelity. Again, I think what that line is saying is like, look, like I've got love and lust for other people, but I will stay faithful and keep those things within. But the book's very hard to read. It's very Latin. So, regardless, Sandor Savast is hitting on Alice, and he's talking about this book, The Art of Love. And if Wikipedia is correct, which I got to take their word for it, because I sure as heck ain't going to read the whole book. But book one talks about redefining the marriage from the possessive nature to more of a mutual satisfactory relationship. It's talking about swinging. There, I said it. Maybe, I don't know. But that's what Sandor Savast, he's creeping. He's creeping because he's trying to say, like, look, don't let Dr. Bill own you. You're a sexual free woman. Free to have sex with any old guy standing within 6 feet of you. But anyway, he's hitting on her. She tells him, oh, I used to manage an art gallery. He says he's got friends in the art business. He could help out with that. Again, he's an elitist. He's connected to everyone. Now, fun fact, the guy who plays Sandor, his name is Sky Dumont, he played Klaus Schenk Graf von Stauffenberg in a movie called War and Remembrance. And guess who else played Klaus Schenk Graf von Stauffenberg? Your boy Tom Cruise in Valkyrie. Isn't that fun? And you'll notice Sandor Savast, he's wearing a blue forget-me-not in his lapel. Again, a Freemason reference. Freemasons started wearing this in 1926 as a sign to not forget the poor. Another curiosity. Guess what Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan, guess what his middle name is? It's Sandor. Just like the name of this guy. Sandor Savast, much like Sandor Savast, Anton LaVey would argue that we need to rebuild the entire structure of humanity to have a more liberated sexuality. Now, Alice, she gets away from old creepster there, and she sees Dr. Bill. No, I'm sorry. She's still dancing with him. I just got notes here. Okay, I'm going off of memory. Alice, she's still dancing. She looks over. She sees Dr. Bill talking to two young smoke shows. And Sandor, he says, marriage makes deception a necessity for both parties. I don't know. Is he French? I'm giving him a French accent. But this, again, is a reference to book one of Ovid's Art of Love. The idea that marriage makes deception a necessity for both parties. It's to deny human nature. To pretend that we get married to somebody and we're no longer sexually attracted to anyone or we don't have sexual fantasies of other people. And that's what the book was saying, which as you can see is very controversial 2,000 years ago. Even Esther Perel wrote a book that was very controversial about it 2,000 years later. Now the reference here, talking about duality in this whole movie, the reference here is the duality of marriage as you see it at Ziegler's party, where everyone's sort of got their formal attire on and on their best behavior. And then a few hours later, you know what goes down at the Somerton mansion. It's the gangbang, son, the orgy ritual. And we're going to go ahead and guess that people like Sandor and Ziegler left the wives at home to go bang prostitutes. The same people are at both parties. See? Now, Dr. Bill, he's talking to these two ladies, Nuala Windsor and Gala. And he's about to seal the deal. They're hitting on him. I mean, he's Tom Cruise, right? I'd hit on Tom Cruise. And Windsor is quite the curious last name for Nuala, because Windsor is a royal house of the United Kingdom. So there's some royal bloodline ideas. It's sort of assumed they're part of the elites. And she claims that she met him before. She's like, I met you, Dr. Bill. There was something in my eye at Rockefeller Plaza, and you helped me get it out. Now, let's take a minute. Hold on. Stop the press. First off, Rockefeller Plaza has a massive statue of Prometheus at the ice rink. And you know Prometheus plays a role as the rebel archetype of Lucifer, the fallen angel. And then she says, I had something in my eye, in my all-seeing eye, and you helped open my eye. Now, guess what else is also at the Rockefeller Plaza? Because the list goes on and on, my friends. The Rainbow Room is at 30 Rock. This is the 39th floor of the Comcast building where NBC is located. And the Rockefellers used to own and operate this restaurant at the Rainbow Room. Because, as you know, if you've watched Eyes Wide Shut, the rainbow shows up many times. And guess what's on the floor of the Rainbow Room? A massive 8-pointed Star of Ishtar. The same 8-pointed Star of Ishtar that you see at Ziegler's house that you will later see at Rainbow Fashions. Because it's all about the goddess. It's all about the female sexuality. The goddess Ishtar is important to the story, because the pagans were all about that goddess worship life. This goes all the way back to the Whore of Babylon, who represents the ushering in of the final age of man. That's why Janet Jackson, she busted out that titty, and she had the Star of Ishtar on her nipple. And it became the most searched event of all history on the internet. She broke the internet first. How much attention and focus and energy went to the goddess, the Star of Ishtar, the 8-pointed star? That's why Rihanna was on the cover of W Magazine as the Whore of Babylon. That's why Katy Perry was at the Super Bowl coming out with the beast, the Whore of Babylon. That's why Beyonce is the Oshun. These are all goddesses. These are all forms of the goddess. Because the occultists, they think that Ishtar or Semiramis or Isis or even the Theotokos, very heretical of them, that the Virgin Mary would be in line with all these goddesses. They believe that all of these female goddesses represent a manifestation of the Great Mother, the goddess that created our Gnostic prison planet, the Sophia. Aleister Crowley, of course, bought into all this too. He said that the goddess of Thelema was the sexually liberated woman, the Scarlet Woman, as the consort to the Great Beast. Who was the Great Beast? Of course it was Aleister Crowley, right? That's what he said. So anyhow, Dr. Bill is being led by these two women, and he's like, where exactly are you taking me? And they say, we're taking you to where the rainbow ends. They start the programming of Dr. Bill Harford, the first scene of this movie. Well, second scene of the movie, excuse me. Are they the Illuminati groomers? Are they possibly prostitutes at the big orgy house? Where does the rainbow end? What does that mean? I'll tell you what it is, and we're going to go deeper into this. When we wrap up the movie in conclusion, I'm going to tell you all about it. It's the end of this reality, the beginning of another. So Dr. Bill, he's ready to bang these two chicks, and here comes a butler, and Dr. Bill's getting summoned by Ziegler. And they escort him upstairs to a bathroom, and there's a prostitute passed out. Her name is Mandy. But before we go there, before he walks up the spiral staircase, again, another idea of the spiral staircase, you'll see that, and that's like a Charles Manson reference, because at the spiral staircase is where Charles Manson said his family was consumed by evil, because they were just hippies until then. Anyhow, you'll notice there's a table with two old dudes. These guys show up at the end also. These are part of the elites, and this circle of strange sexual magic ideas. Again, I'll cover it at the end. Now, Kubrick, he loved the bathrooms. You remember in The Shining how crazy that bathroom was when Jack Nicholson goes out there to make up with the woman and she turns out to be this old lady falling apart? Kubrick's got this whole thing with bathrooms. And, of course, Dr. Bill, he goes in the bathroom. And Ziegler's in there. There's a prostitute passed out on the couch. It's a massive bathroom. And Ziegler just kind of like, he wants to dump Mandy out of there. He's just like, I just need to get her out of here. Like, he's done with her. But she's like damn near dead. And isn't this typical of the elites? Like how they go to the orgy and they didn't bring their wives. They leave the wives at home. It's all about them. The ends always justify the means. Men, they are the gods. They can do whatever they want. They've made it to the level. Just like Lieber 77, the Book of Oz tells you that man is God. They can separate lives. They can lie to their spouse. Doesn't bother them. And not to sound like a Puritan, but Ziegler, he could care less if Mandy lives or dies. You can see it on the way he talks to Dr. Bill. He's used her for his purpose, and that's it. And this is, again, a Crowley idea. The slave shall serve. She was just there to satisfy him, get her out of here. I don't care if she lives or dies. I got to get back to the party, get back to my wife, get her out of here. And ironically, in the background, you'll see a painting on the wall of a woman sprawled out on a couch nude. Looks just like Mandy. Very strange. Now, Bill and Alice, they get home from the party, and they're making out in front of the mirror. And Alice, she does not seem into it at all. But Dr. Bill, he's aloof. He's a goofball. He has no clue. He's into it. She seems like she could care less. And this is what actually pissed off a lot of folks. They thought, because in the trailer they showed like a clip of this scene, they thought they were going to get this Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman porno, but they only got a few seconds in the movie. Because as you know, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman were married at the time of the film. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the trailer shows more sex than the actual movie does between Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. And I don't know if I'm crazy, but I swear I saw this movie in the theater when it came out. Back in, 99? Anyhow, doesn't matter. They're in the mirror, they're making out. Alice is disinterested, but the mirror is important. They're making out in front of it. Alice is gazing at it. Because the mirror is much like the occult tale of Alice in Wonderland called Through the Looking Glass and what Alice found there. In this case, we quite literally have Alice through the looking glass. And what does she find there? Well, she finds old Dr. Bill trying to bang hookers at the orgy party on the other side of the rainbow on the dark side. Spoiler alert. Next scene. Kubrick shows you a comparison of these normal sort of weekday grinds. Alice's, you know, homekeeping. She's raising the kids. Dr. Bill's doing his Dr. Bill thing. Gets a nice pair of boobies now and again. You know, life, right? They're just doing their life thing. But Alice, she's so burned out. She's so tired of this life. She's tired of the dumb kid. Boring Bill. She grabs some herb from the medicine cabinet. She crumbles up a nice doober. And her and Dr. Bill, they start puffing the magic dragon. And then she drops it on him. And what you'll hear, I'm going to play the clip. What you'll hear is an escalating fight where Bill doesn't stand a chance. He's the aloof goofball husband. And more importantly, you're going to hear one major point of this whole film is the male and female sexuality is what this film is all about. And this is long, right? I'm going to play it. This is going to be a long clip. There's going to be some explicit lyrics, but this is going to be kind of a longer one, and I'll come back and sort of break down what's going on halfway through the clip.
Tell me something. Those two girls at the party last night? Did you, by any chance, happen to fuck them?
What? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the two girls that you were so blatantly hitting on.
I wasn't hitting on anybody.
Who were they?
They were just a couple of models.
And where did you disappear to with them for so long?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I didn't disappear with anybody. Ziegler wasn't feeling too well. I got called upstairs to see him. Anyway, who's the guy you were dancing with?
A friend of the Zieglers.
What did he want?
What did he want? What did he want? Sex. Upstairs. Then and there.
Is that all?
Yeah, that was all.
Just wanted to fuck my wife.
That's right.
I guess that's understandable.
Understandable? Mm.
Because you are a very, very beautiful woman.
Whoa. Wait. So, because I'm a beautiful woman, the only reason any man ever wants to talk to me is because he wants to fuck me? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think it's quite that black and white, but I think we both know what men are like.
So on that basis, I should conclude that you wanted to fuck those two models.
There are exceptions.
What makes you an exception?
What makes me an exception is that I happen to be in love with you. And because we're married, and because I would never lie to you or hurt you.
Do you realize that what you're saying is that the only reason you wouldn't fuck those two models is out of consideration for me?
Not because you really wouldn't want to.
It's just... relax, Alice. This pot is making you aggressive.
No! It's not the pot, it's you! Why can't you ever give me a straight fucking answer?
I was under the impression that's what I was doing. I don't even know what we're arguing about here.
I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to find out where you're coming from.
Where I'm coming from?
Look, let's say, for example, you have some gorgeous woman standing in your office, naked, and you're feeling her fucking tits. Now, what I want to know, what are you really thinking about when you're squeezing them?
Alice, I happen to be a doctor. It's all very impersonal, and you know there's always a nurse present.
So when you're feeling tits, it's nothing more than just your professionalism. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Sex is the last thing on my mind when I'm with a patient.
Uh-huh. Now, when she is having her little titty squeezed, do you think she ever has any little fantasies about what handsome Dr. Bill's dickie might be like?
I can assure you, sex is the last thing on this fucking hypothetical woman patient's mind.
And what makes you so sure?
If for no better reason, because she's afraid of what I might find.
Okay, so after you tell her that everything's fine, what then?
What then? I don't know, Alice. What then? Look. Women don't... they basically just don't think like that.
Millions of years of evolution. Right? Right? Men have to stick it in every place they can, but for women, it is just about security and commitment and whatever the fuck else.
A little oversimplified, Alice, but yes, something like that.
If you men only knew.
I'll tell you what I do know is you got a little stoned tonight, you've been trying to pick a fight with me, and now you're trying to make me jealous.
But you're not the jealous type, are you?
No, I'm not.
You've never been jealous about me, have you?
No, I haven't.
And why haven't you ever been jealous about me?
Well, I don't know, Alice. Maybe because you're my wife. Maybe because you're the mother of my child. And I know you would never be unfaithful to me.
You are very, very sure of yourself, aren't you?
No. I'm sure of you. Do you think that's funny? Now we get the fucking laughing fit, right?
Now first, note. Did you catch how she is the all-knowing Sophia? She knew Bill was with these smoke shows at the office with the boobies out. She is trying to shake things up. She's bored and quite frankly over Dr. Bill in this massive apartment and not having to go to work. So she starts a fight with him. A fight about sex and fidelity and marriage and how he doesn't get jealous enough and somehow that's a problem. Oh, these women, you just can't keep them happy, you know? Because women are the moon mystery. Their emotions, they ebb and flow over a full month, whereas men, we're kind of more predictable because we ebb and flow over one day, right? We're like the sun. That, anyhow. Oh boy, that's getting into the trigger zone. Almost went into the trigger zone. But he's not jealous, and somehow that's a problem. She's being argumentative. You know what, Tom Cruise? If Tom Cruise, I would never treat you that way, buddy. But she's being argumentative. She says she's not being argumentative. She's trying to understand where he's coming from. Oh boy, isn't this just a and how beautifully done is this scene? This is such a regular fight here, right? Fellas, don't try to win a verbal argument with your lady. It's impossible. You're bringing a pocket knife to a gunfight. Women are samurais of fighting. We can't hang with this. And that's what Kubrick is showing you. And Dr. Bill, he's just a goofball to begin with. Like, he didn't stand a chance. Didn't stand a chance. And she just eviscerates and disembowels him in front of everyone. Now, we're gonna continue the clip here. Let's get back into this. This will be a few more minutes too, and I'll hit you on the other side of this because this is where things get real interesting.
Do you remember last summer at Cape Cod?
Yes.
Do you remember one night in the dining room, there was this young naval officer, and he was sitting near our table with two other officers?
No.
The waiter brought him a message, which point he left. Nothing rings a bell?
No.
I first saw him that morning in the lobby. He was checking into the hotel, and he was following the bellboy with his luggage to the elevator. He glanced at me as he walked past, just a glance. Nothing more. Move. That afternoon, Helena went to the movies with her friend, and you and I made love. And we made plans about our future. And we talked about Helena. And yet, at no time was he ever out of my mind. And I thought if he wanted me, even if it was only for one night, I was ready to give up everything. You. Thank you. I barely slept that night. And I woke up the next morning in a panic. I didn't know whether I was afraid that he had left or that he might still be there. But by dinner, I realized he was gone. And I was relieved.
Now we first, we get the first glimpse of what Kubrick and Arthur Schnitzler, that's the guy who wrote Dream Novella that this movie was based upon, we get the first glimpse of what they're trying to convey. Questioning monogamy, the ups and downs of long-term relationships. And Alice, she thinks it's funny that she was willing to give it all up. Tom Cruise, their stupid kid, all of it. For some naval officer she never even met. Now, what's curious is that the naval officer is not the same character in the book. So the guy in the book, and we're going to talk about that on the supporter feeds when we go into the Dream Novella, but basically, Kubrick created this naval officer character. There was a character that she was fantasizing about, but it wasn't a naval officer. So Kubrick created this. Now, why does this matter? Well, that's supposed to be L. Ron Hubbard, my friend. Yes. L. Ron Hubbard is important because he pulled the robbery on Jack Parsons' wife, Sarah Northrup. Now, L. Ron Hubbard was a naval officer. And what was even more curious is that when he started the Church of Scientology, he started this sort of like fake navy called the Sea Org. And basically, it's like this flotilla of ships. And the names of the ships are Diana, Athena, and Apollo. And if you're taking notes, Diana and Athena, of course, are female goddesses of moon and the goddess of wisdom. So, of course, it's all connected, right? And, of course, your boy Tom Cruise, member of the Church of Scientology, he insisted on sending his six-year-old daughter that he had with Katie Holmes, one of his wives. He wanted to send their six-year-old daughter to Sea Org to be on this flotilla of ships. And that's allegedly how the marriage fell apart. You know, Katie, why, you know, just listen. Tom's just trying to help out here. No, I'm just kidding. but some conspiracies, they claim that L. Ron Hubbard froze his sperm and Tom used that sperm to impregnate Katie Holmes so that their daughter Suri would be the next leader of the Church of Scientology. Oh, dear. Fun fact. Tom Cruise divorced all his wives when they hit the age of 33. Quite a curious number if you follow Freemasonry as the highest level of degree in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. But anyhow, mostly this dialogue, we're talking about fidelity, envy, cheating, and to the G's, they'd be the same thing. Little Andre 3000 shout out, right? Remember that? The Bill, he hears all this, right? She's laying this all on him, and he's literally frozen in the deadlights. Alice looks like a straight killer. She drops it all on him. She's honest, I'll give her that, but whew, what a lot to process, right? I mean, she didn't do it, right? She didn't actually have sex with a Navy officer, but she wanted to. But isn't the truth, much like Sandor talked about with the Ovid book, the truth is that we all have those kinds of moments, right? I mean, who doesn't want to have a little sex with strangers sometimes, right? It's to deny the human nature to want to do it. But you gotta be a good, faithful spouse. You shouldn't do it, right? And that's what the dynamic of this movie is all about. Why is it such a tough conversation to have, right? I'm not saying that I'm I'm not like this woke level guy that I can have those conversations. I don't want to hear about what Mrs. Weishaupt fantasizes about all the time. I don't need to hear every gory detail, right? So that's a lot. And Dr. Bill, it's a lot for him. It puts him in the deadlights. He's frozen like a deer. When she drops it on him, he wasn't ready. Because she's the goddess. She's the Sophia of wisdom. She knows all. And he's just a dumbass. But then the phone rings. Boom. Dr. Bill saved by the bell. One of his patients died. Thank God. Get me out of here. So he heads out. And the next scene, you know, Bill, he's tripping. He's in the taxi. He's like, oh my God. Alice wants to bang this Navy officer. He's trying to process it. He has to go. And what's curious is before that, before he leaves the house, he actually says, before he goes to visit the family of this deceased guy, he says to her, to Alice, he says, I think I have to go over there and show my face, which is foreshadowing for when he makes it to the orgy house and they make him take his mask off. But anyway, he goes in the cab. The cabs are here. He's melting down. He's imagining this whole fantasy of Alice banging the Navy officer, and he's getting all worked up. But he makes it to the house, and he's greeted by Marion. This is the daughter of the dead guy. And she's kind of like an okay-looking Nicole Kidman, which makes sense because in Schnitzler's novel, Dr. Bill actually wants to bang her. Whereas in the film, it doesn't quite come off like that, but that's how the book goes. Instead, in the film, Marion, she's throwing herself at Bill. Like, she wants to bang Bill, but he sort of seems completely disinterested. He's disengaged. She even tells him in the movie, she says she loves him. She tries to kiss on him, but he rejects. And right when that happens, the doorbell rings again. Saved by the bell. Rest in peace, Screech. Fun fact, Marion was supposed to be played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, but instead she did, I believe it was a Cronenberg movie called Existence. I haven't seen it. But Marion plays a role in the Triple Goddess. She is the crone, I argue. Sort of, right? She's older, not that old, but she symbolically represents death, as crone does, because the death of her father is why Dr. Bill is there. And if you look closely, as I showed in Kubrick's Code, at her place, you can see a mask on the wall, and that mask will later be shown at the orgy house. Someone is wearing that mask. See, everyone's connected here. So Dr. Bill, he gets out of there, and because the doorbell rang, and it turns out it was Marion's husband. Ooh. And Dr. Bill heads out, and he's walking the streets in New York City. There's a scene where some frat boys dressed in Yale outfits, all of them completely dressed head to toe in Yale stuff. For no apparent reason, they bully Tom Cruise. And they imply that he's gay. Now, let's talk about that. There's a couple of things here, right? First off, Tom Cruise's real last name is Mapother. I don't even know how to say his last name. Cruise is his middle name. Now, when he came into prominence back in the 70s, there was a thing called cruising that is what gay dudes did to find other gay dudes. So there's always been allegations that Tom Cruise is gay. Now, curious enough, the very next shot after these guys bully Tom Cruise and call him gay is a place called the Back Fence, which sounds pretty gay, right? And I Googled it, and it's closed down apparently, but it wasn't a gay bar. Total missed opportunity here, but I found it very interesting. Now, of course, we're not going to gloss over the fact that they're all wearing Yale, which is where the elites go through the Skull and Bones. And the allegations are that at the Skull and Bones secret society, there are these homosexual hazing rituals where the initiates must go through anal and oral sex in coffins. And then they get photos taken of them, and that is used as blackmail, which, again, plays a role in this story. Now, Dr. Bill, He gets visited by the prostitute Domino, who looks much more like a model than a hooker, but, you know, let's suspend belief here for a minute. And they're walking and talking, and they walk past a canisterie, something Kubrick is quite fond of. In fact, when I go through the making of Eyes Wide Shut on the bonus episode, we're going to talk about this. I'll talk about it right now. Apparently, Kubrick recreated New York on a set for this movie, because it wasn't filmed in New York City. It was filmed in London or whatever, because Kubrick wouldn't come back to America. Because he faked the moon landing, right? Anyhow, he recreated this whole thing authentically, and it included a canisterie that he knew about from when he lived there. And it's also like a Jewish comfort food, so there's like a reference to the Jewish undertones that are in Dream Novella and so on. Anyway, so Domino, she's like, okay, mister, you looking for a good time? He's like, yep, sure am. So Domino gets Dr. Bill up to the room, and it's kind of run down. The apartment's got this sort of glossy pink tile, which is a fun fact, identical to my first apartment's bathroom, had that same pink tile. And the only verbal acknowledgement that it's actually Christmas comes at this scene where Bill goes into her apartment and says, that's a nice tree. The only time it happens. I mean, if you don't count how Helena asks to go to the Nutcracker. Anyhow. But Bill, again, he don't have the heart to make it happen. He can't seal the deal. They talk about the price of doing it. They're actually smooching. And boom, the cell phone starts ringing. And Alice, you know, it's her. She's smoking the cigarettes at home. Because, like, she's sort of portraying this bored, horny housewife. And she's just calling to check in on him. And he hangs up. And he comes to the conclusion, like, maybe I shouldn't do sexy time. And in the background, in her apartment, you'll see the book Introducing Sociology. And the reason that's there is because Kubrick says Domino is supposed to be in college. But Bill, he's a good guy, right? He insists on paying for the visit. And you get little vibes of Patrick Bateman here from American Psycho. But he also, before he leaves, he looks in the mirror. Again, this is a reference through the looking glass. He's about to go to the other side. So he leaves. But he's continuing his journey. And he goes to the Sonata Cafe. Now, this is where his buddy, Nick Nightingale, told him earlier at the house party, at Ziegler's house party, he said, look, I'm going to be performing at the Sonata Cafe. And in my book, in Kubrick's Code, you'll see the inconsistencies again. Because on the posters outside, the names corresponding to the instruments don't line up. And when Dr. Bill gets in, you'll hear Nick talking on the microphone. He says, you know, Larry McVay's on the bass. But in the photos outside the club, Larry McVay's on the drums. And everyone knows that Kip Fleming is supposed to be on the drums. Now, what does that mean in the big scheme of things? I don't know. Maybe just another inconsistency. So Nick, he's wrapping up the set, and he's talking to Dr. Bill. And he tells Dr. Bill, look, I'm going to go play piano at this orgy blindfolded. And Dr. Bill's like, oh, tell me more.
I think another gig later tonight.
Playing somewhere else tonight?
They only get started there around 2.
In the village?
Believe it or not, I don't actually know the address yet.
You don't?
No, it may sound ridiculous, but it's in a different place every time, and I only get it about an hour or so before.
Different place every time?
So far.
And what's the big mystery?
Hey, man, I just played the piano.
Nick, I'm sorry, is there something I'm missing here?
I play blindfolded.
What?
Yeah. I play blindfolded.
You're putting me on.
No, it's true. And the last time, the blindfold wasn't on so well.
Man. Bill, I have seen one or two things in my life, but never, never anything like this. And never such women.
Well, excuse me.
Now, what's curious here, this is something I noticed here, this did not make Kubrick's Code to the book, but the Sonata Cafe has a sign out front that says live music until 3 a.m. And we confirm that the live music is stopping because Nick Nightingale closes out the set and says, good night, we're wrapping it up. Thus, it must be 3 a.m. because it says on the sign out front they play live music until 3 a.m. But Nick says, I'm going to the orgy for a show at 2 a.m. An inconsistency? Maybe. But 3 a.m., of course, an important time. The inversion time. The inversion of... it's the time when all the evil happens, right? Because Christ allegedly died at 3 p.m. Now, another curiosity, Nick Nightingale, that's a curious name. Not the name in the book, in Dream Novella, it's a little bit different. But a nightingale, a name Kubrick chose, is a bird that sings at night, just like Nick performing at night. And in this scene, there's rumors that Kubrick is seen at the bar. It's not true. I'll put the photo, you know, I'm going to have some photos. I'll put on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe, look at the show notes. And you can see what you think. It don't really look like him too much. Now, Nick is telling Dr. Bill, he's like, look, I've got to put a blindfold on, and I play this orgy. And the blindfold, of course, symbolic of Freemasonry with the hoodwink. One of the rituals for the initiates. I believe it's the entered apprentice or whatever. But now Nick, he's also saved by the ring of the phone. While he's talking to Dr. Bill, and it's the ringleader of the orgy party. And he writes down the password, Fidelio. And Nick asserts to Dr. Bill it's a Beethoven opera before confirming that it is the password to the party. Now, let's look at that, because Fidelio is a play, a Beethoven play, about a woman who sacrifices herself for her man's. Something that actually goes down at the orgy house. Kubrick said that culture never refined society. He said that his example was that the top Nazis, they were pretty cultured. They were sophisticated. Obviously, it didn't do much for them. So it could be a narrative about Beethoven. It could be a narrative about fidelity, right? Because that's a theme here from Ovid's Art of Love and the theme of the movie in general. But Dr. Bill, he's interested. He's like, I'm in. I will see you there, Mr. Nightingale. I'm going to go get me a little costume. So Dr. Bill leaves. He goes to Rainbow Fashions. Of course, the rainbow. And again, a photo I will put on the images here. You'll notice that when he approaches the building, there's two storefronts. There's Over the Rainbow and Under the Rainbow. And he goes Over the Rainbow. Because when he's inside Over the Rainbow, you see, you confirm the buildings out the window that they're on the second story. Because Over the Rainbow and Under the Rainbow, as above, so below. Right? You get it? Now, some people claim that there's a Freemasonic lodge next door, but I've never seen proof of that. And to be honest, the film wasn't shot in New York anyway. It was all on a set, so... Unless Kubrick built a Freemasonic lodge, not true. Now, we're going to wrap up part one right here, because I got a lot more to get through. And we're going to talk about the symbolism of the rainbow when we return for part two. And we're going to walk through Fritz Springmeier's Total Mind Control Slave Book, because it's going to talk about the Wizard of Oz. It's going to talk about Alice in Wonderland. It's going to talk about the dissociation of the mind control subject, which is gonna be, you guessed it, Tom Cruise. When Nuala Windsor says, I'm going to take you to the end of the rainbow, she's basically saying, like, you're about to get it, big dog. You're about to get the MK Ultra programming. And then we're going to talk about that infamous orgy scene. We're going to talk about ritual magic. We're going to talk about the sex magic. We're going to talk about the masks, the OTO, the Rothschilds. Oh my goodness. The triple goddess. It's all going to come together in part two. And I'm going to give you the in conclusion stuff where we're going to break down the alchemical wedding and what this is all about opening the eyes of the initiate. All right, stay subscribed to the show because I'm going to drop part two. And beyond that, if you want to be a supporter, you'll get all the bonus stuff where we're going to go so deep it'll hurt. So deep it'll hurt. And you know where to find that. Link's in the show notes. You can get in the VIP section. You could get on the Patreon or you can get on the Rockfin. Until next time, my friend, you know what to do. Stay woke.